don't have.
I've got one, but I had one.
Most effective ringtone, I think I've heard.
Oh, I don't have that.
I mean, you answer that one.
That's fine.
I've got Echo.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna go to Springfield for an hour.
Okay, should we call the meeting to order? Should we call the meeting to order? Want to do a roll call?
Hodson?
Here.
Palinkas?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Banks?
Here.
Colbert? Lynn? And Emmanuel?
Here. I am gonna ask us to speak up because I know there was, I saw the discussion from the last meeting, it's hard to hear. And so I'm gonna ask us all to try to speak up. Okay, we have our approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Jack?
Second.
Palinkas? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, approval of the minutes from both the open session and the closed session on October 5th?
Move.
Jack, move.
Second.
Palinkas, second, all in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. I'd ask for public participation.
Hi, I'm Dave Laker. I was gonna speak tonight to issues in the food service area and in dietary, but I decided not to because I've seen that they're making improvement. They've got several things going on, and I thought I'd wait at least a month. And if I feel I still need to say something, I can always do it then, but, all right.
I'll say something. Mary Schultz, guys, I don't know nursing at all, so I don't know best practices, and obviously we're paying the management company to know that. But I had an idea, I guess after yesterday, having experience here, and it's one of those that might be best brought up at the family meeting, but it's a thing that sometimes get brought up at the family meeting, don't seem to go anywhere. I'm bringing it up in front of you guys, since you're the bosses. It just seems to me that with as much turnover as we have, once again, I don't know best practice, but it seems like the people working in the food service, like distributing the drinks, should have a list of everybody's criteria for drinks, as in thickened, regular, straw, no straw, special sippy cup. And I noticed that yesterday because, of course, there's so much turnover in the health that they don't get to know the people. And, of course, those things can change on a weekly basis or a daily basis, you know, kind of thing. But I noticed yesterday some people were asking the nurses, and the nurses, I didn't know their faces either. They couldn't answer the question. And, of course, then you have to wait until the meal comes out because it is printed on the strip that has their name and their meal. But that's a little too late. I mean, the person has missed an opportunity to be served ahead and maybe, God forbid, drink some extra liquids if you wait that amount of time. So I'm, like, once again, I don't know nursing or best practice, but that just kind of seemed like common sense to me that everybody handing out drinks would have a list of the resident and what their requirement was. So that's one thing. I appreciate that you're not covering your food service, and I appreciate that we've got a new guy in charge, and he's working on it. They introduced us at the family meeting. But, I mean, one of the meals I was at the other day, breakfast was a muffin and a sausage patty, and I felt bad. Once again, nobody's going to waste away here. There's plenty of meals. But I just felt bad when, you know, residents were asking for eggs, and the guy passing out the meal said, oh, we're out of eggs. And we were also out of brown sugar for the oatmeal, you know, the single serve packet, so they were having to bring big containers. And we were also out of butter, the little single serves. We were having to hunk off from, like, I guess would be a 4-pound butter chunk. And I mean, since you guys are always infinitely short of help anyway, I mean, that's just what a gross, ineffective use of resources that a guy is having to spoon from a 2-pound thing of brown sugar into individual containers and then hunk off pieces of butter into individual servings. So, once again, I'm not worried about people wasting away, but we never have enough help anyway, and that just seemed very inefficient. I also was wondering about this the other day, because I know, you know, we're always complaining that we don't have enough help, and I get that nursing staff might be hard to get, but, you know, at our last family meeting, it came up in a discussion that a person person who I had known from working in the lunchroom who loved him was also an agency employee, and he had moved on to something else. And I thought, good God, I get that CNAs, we might have to go through agencies, but for a regular lunchroom employee that we are actually paying temp agencies a fee for that kind of employee seems ridiculous to me. And I know it was also mentioned at that same meeting that we can't hire maintenance men. And for the, you know, we just can't get them. And it dropped on to me. I tend to read the want-ads on Sunday, and I can't remember ever seeing us advertised. Now, I usually skip the part about, you know, healthcare because I don't have healthcare experience, but it seemed like I might have read something if we were looking for maintenance or cafeteria workers, and I just don't remember ever reading those. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just knew I didn't want to work here and glossed it over in my head. But if we're not advertising for those, that would seem like that's common sense why we're short of help. I think that those are my only issues to bring up this time.
Okay. Any other public participation? Thank you. Okay. Communications. Are there minutes from the family council this month? Or
I sent them out by email the following day.
Okay. You want to comment on, or were you?
I did not go to that one.
Okay. Would you go ahead and comment on them a little bit, Karen, or highlight them? Can you remember? Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to look at them.
It was actually a really good meeting.
Yeah,
the families dominated. You know, usually there's a woman who sometimes acts like a facilitator, and to me, she kind of bogs it down. And instead, we just kind of took over last time and just started talking. And there were actually some really good new faces there. I met people who had parents in my mom's dining room that I didn't know their kids, you know, so it was good to, but we basically just ran the meeting, I thought that was made it more productive. Now, whether anything comes of it will be a thing, but we basically were not boxed.
We had 10 people show up.
Yeah, we had a good showing.
Not allowed to do this, right? Not allowed to have public participation, but
well, when I jumped in.
I know, I appreciate that. I took it.
Public comment, right. I don't think so.
Thank you. I can't have any more public participation, but good to have that update. Anybody else? Yes, Jeff.
Well, I would like to ask Deb if it's appropriate. Last week we had that facilities assessment report that included the nursing home, and I have a copy of that. Should we wait until that's presented before the board before I speak of it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other communications? Any other board members have something to share? Okay. Dana, can you tell us about the lead filtration project?
Yes. In your packet, there should have been probably your favorite clip, number of documents. There's actually three documents there. And if you remember, this lead filtration project came about with this study during the summer, came to you, and you guys recently agreed to hire GHR to put together documentation and drawings for this project. So I'm coming for you today to seek approval. We've put together a schedule. Pending your approval this evening, we'd like to advertise Thursday of this week. Kind of read through it, but the project would be complete basically by the end of the second week in March. Some of the items are a 6-week lead time. I'd like to get the contract. I'd like to get the bid in, get a contract, and by the end of December, have the low bidder, successful bidder, order all the materials. What we're trying to do, and working obviously very closely with Scott and Karen, is to minimize the downtime of the laundry facility downstairs in the basement. That would have to be off. We've had that discussion previously with Scott and Karen, so they're aware, but we're trying to minimize that time. So by getting all the materials here in advance, trying to press that time as short as possible so that at least we get at least a few machines back up and working. We can have some assemblies of the laundry to assist. So the second document there is actual physical drawings. I don't know if anybody wants to look through. Right now, the laundry venting in the basement is vented upstairs. On the roof, and the problem is that it's right by the intake of the boilers. We've got one boiler that's been commissioned because it's ingested too much lint. It cannot be cleaned. because of the style of boiler that they are. We would take a portion of the chapel room and one of the exits, bring up the piping, take it out to the courtyard, and put a filtration system out there. We'd have to put an additional door for egress in the chapel, but really would have a minimal impact on the facility during and after construction. So all of that is listed within the drawings. The third document I've provided to you is just kind of a rehash of the cost estimate, $225,000. That does include about 40% of contingency fees. So the actual estimated construction cost is about $150,000. That was in the material. All of this is in the material that you've seen before. If anybody has any questions, concerns?
Just on the schedule, the nursing home board meeting is December 14th in December. You meet on the second Monday. We moved up all the other committee and standing committee meetings in December because of the holidays. I don't know if the nursing home board is interested in moving its meeting to the 7th, but I would just point that out.
Yeah, I'll make that. Sorry.
And so, given what Deb's bringing up, is that
that'll have to, well, if we change the schedule, we would have to. Whatever date, if it's the 14th, then we'll bring it to you on the 14th and seek approval.
Does that work still?
Yeah, we can get it done.
Does that seem okay to you guys? So please, if it slows down a little bit. And everybody remembers, this is really, it's called the Lint Filtration Project, but it's really the boiler project. We're trying to fix the lint. And if anybody, it was Karen showed me several weeks ago, somebody, the lint, pretty impressive. But well, so if you do that and it goes out to the courtyard, does that have any impact, negative impact on the courtyard?
In the courtyard, we don't believe so, because of the filtration system that's being put in out there, it should capture 99% of, they'll have to be emptied, but it's a terrific system, and minimal impact on courtyard, the chapel, or operation during the construction, except for shutting down the laundry. But it's a great solution. It's the best solution of the five that we had to try and make this work for us for the future. So.
And by doing this, we protect a boiler, or
well, we're protecting three boilers. Doing this project, okay. And we will have to go back and replace those in the future here, because we're operating the building off of three boilers, which the building can operate and it was designed to do that. But if we have a problem or an issue with one boiler, then we have a serious problem. So we like to have backups in our buildings, particularly this one. It's operated 24 hours with clients.
So, Dana, I'm looking at the documents you provided, and I see the plans, and I see something dated July 6th that, where is the actual bid document as that we're supposed to be?
I didn't think anybody
okay,
would
that's
want
it.
It's
okay, does anybody
pages?
Want to see that? Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I said, where's the actual bid?
I've printed mine back and forth because I'm trying to save paper.
And no.
If somebody would like that, I do have it electronically, and I can certainly send it to you.
Well, and after you approve it, it will be posted on our website so that you can see it.
Have you got questions, Dr. Bunch?
No, I just, it's just,
about it because that's reasonable.
I'm glad that one was available to look at if we wanted to. It's just that when you're asked to approve something,
right,
you really want
right.
to actually see.
I just went through it again this weekend, so that'd
sort
be
of.
Happy for you.
Okay, other questions or comments? Do I have a motion?
I move to approve.
I'll second that.
You guys are becoming regulars. Okay, all right. And all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thanks, Dana.
Thank you very much.
Okay. agenda item, the Gloria Valenti Award. We have our winner.
We have one of our very own that was nominated, and Tracy. Thank you. One of our family members nominated Tracy. He was able to be at the dinner. Had lots of good things to say about Tracy. The Gloria Valenti Award, I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. She was actually a caregiver for a retired Professor Martin Wagner, and he established the award in her honor, and she's still alive. She participated in the actual event.
Gloria Valenti, did you mean?
Yes,
yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know Gloria Valenti, she was the chief nurse executive at Carle for a number of years until she started her own
business.
Organization, and I just think it's a fine home care service, and to be recognized by in that venue is really a pretty significant recognition. I mean, this isn't somebody who doesn't know what's going on in the field. It's not somebody who doesn't recognize fully long-term care and to get to...
And went through a process and
right.
was screened. And we're really proud of Tracy. We were able to celebrate. Mary was able to be there. It was a nice celebration.
And one of the other people that was recognized was Dr. Ho, who was formerly our medical director here and also has done a lot of volunteer work here as well.
But we're really proud of Tracy. The family have a lot of good things to say. And there were actually a lot of people there that knew Tracy as well from the relationships
yep.
that she's built with families. So she knew a lot of people. It was a good event. Positive. And Tracy is a good role model for our other staff.
Yep.
Yeah. From the board, Tracy, I would just like to say congratulations. It's lovely to have somebody giving us, you know, making us proud. Representing us well in the community, making sort of setting the standard, and we really, really, really do appreciate that.
Thank
you should be really proud of yourself. We are.
Thank you very much.
I happened to be in Spain when I was reading about it. It was a joy to read about in Spain. I took that. Yes. Oh, I'm not allowed to have you talk. Can I?
No, she's staff.
No, it was Mr. Lee.
Oh.
He was raising his hand.
Oh.
Come on. Please make a comment.
You can't stop me. Just jump in.
My wife was moved from 4 to 1, and she made it work.
Standing.
Very, very nice. Thank you so much.
Back to work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy.
Okay, management report. Let's go through quickly the strategic objectives and see where we stand on these. Just a reminder, these are the strategic objectives we created when we did the plan, which we're going to be revisiting. And these were sort of also the issues that were identified more recently and ones we decided we're going to be tracking because we're concerned about them and want to make sure we progress on them. So take it away.
All right, let's go to page 12, issue number 1, current open positions. And I just want to point out, Human Resources Director is still open, but we do have 2 applicants that we are currently interviewing for that position. Social Services Director, that position you see there is hired. We have a new Social Services Director that will be starting on November 16th. In regards to our open maintenance assistance positions, those positions were advertised. You can see in October we had the 2 positions were open and both positions have been filled. One is already working and the other one is
starts this week.
Going through orientation this week.
But and if I'm reading this right, this is trying to hope it is since I'm so in September we had 17, October 15, November 13 open positions.
In terms of
the types of open positions,
correct.
Not the FTEs.
Correct. All right, page 13 and 14, retention and turnover. So our retention rate for all staff improved to 65.6%. It was 64.9% in August. Our for nursing, it also improved to 63.4%. CNAs also showed slight improvement to 62% from 59.5% in August. Turnover rates. In September, for all staff, it was actually up by 0.2 percentage points. For nursing, we'll call that again a negligible change because it actually went down by 0.2 percentage points. But CNA turnover rate did decrease from 81.1% to 78.9%. Clearly, we're still way above our benchmark at 52.4%, but I believe we are hopefully starting to see a positive movement in decreasing our turnover rate. And I say that because if you take a look at the bottom of page 13 on our applications, hires, and separations, in September we had 20 applications. We only had one hire and four separations, which means we went backwards. But as I noted on page 14, in October, 35 CNA applications were reviewed. And we had orientation class 2 weeks ago where we had 9 CNAs. There were an additional 2 offers that were actually turned down in addition to the 9. But one decided to stay at their current facility, the other decided to stay closer to home. But we do have 12 additional applications that we are currently evaluating, and we have, Karen, how many in this?
2 CNAs in this one, so possibly 3, depending on physical.
So the number of applications that we have clearly is up. So we're doing everything we can to process these applications as quickly as possible. Dietary staffing. Our goal is about 19.65 FTEs. At the end of September and into October, we're basically at full staffing at 19.5. We make up the other 0.10 with additional hours or overtime. So pretty much we're fully staffed in dietary. And you can see in September, going back to page 13 at the very bottom, we looked at 18 applications in September. We had one hire and one separation, and you can see if you go back that the number of separations that we are seeing in dietary is slowing down from the highs that we saw in February and March, where we had 4 each in those 2 months. And again, with the preceptor training program that we have in place, our dietary preceptor was actually out for a few weeks on medical leave, and now we're actively participating in the new employee training. But with Tim, our new dietary manager, I think he has been doing a wonderful job, you know, not only obviously in the dining service, but obviously directly related is in terms of making sure that all of the staff, cooks and food service workers, are being properly trained, and also making sure that our supervisors are supervising our staff appropriately. So all those things, I believe, are starting to come together, and hopefully we'll continue to see improvements in the food service and hopefully continue to see reduction in the number of issues and complaints that we have and continue to have with food service. On page 16, which is the staffing data from CMS, there's no changes in the facilities. There is an update to the state averages, but I won't go through those. There were minimal changes in that comparative data. On page 17, agency costs. You can see in September, our agency costs were down to $84,000 for the month. Our preliminary estimate for October is a further reduction down to $67,000, assuming that we don't have any late invoices submitted by any of the staffing agencies. So right now we've got 67,000 in invoices submitted as of last week.
When you're looking on page 16 at the nursing hours per resident. When you're reading that report, there's the reported hours and the expected hours, and then what then is called the adjusted hours per resident per day, and it's for each of the nursing homes. And we have the highest adjusted hours per resident per day. Now that's total hours. We don't have the highest adjusted hours nursing. We've got the highest adjusted hours total direct care staff. But even our nursing is right there, kind of in the right in the middle of the pack. So just for perspective, we have higher staffing per resident per day, at least in this particular month, than any other home in the community. Just as a perspective.
And these, our numbers will be updated because we just had our annual survey, and so that's the time when they do the look back based on our payroll right around the annual survey. And so we have more nursing hours this time around because also it takes into account our supervisory nursing hour position. So I anticipate that we will see an increase in the adjusted nursing hours once the new numbers are processed by CMS.
And I don't mean to say that is that everything's great, because we know that that's not the case. But I also presented just to make sure that there's a balanced perspective on if we don't have enough staff, imagine how you would feel in another facility where the adjusted hours per patient day are even less. Some of them 10, 20% less.
Okay, so if you fast forward to page 23 and 24, and those are new charts that I've added for the Pinnacle surveys. And so we've had this previous discussion because the monthly Pinnacle report that you have it is monthly surveys, which are 15 each month. And so last month I included a summary report for the quarterly scores, which would be similar to page 22, but I thought a graphical summary of the last four quarterly data will give you a better idea of the trends that you're seeing with the quarterly numbers. So again, based on the quarterly numbers, we have 7 measures that show a positive trend up, and we have 9 out of the 16 total measures that are showing a four-quarter downward trend. And again, they are on page 23 and page 24. Okay. And again, if there's anything, because I'm skipping, I'm not covering all of this, I'm just pointing out some of the highlights. I want to go to page 29, which is issue number 4, food service improvement. And again, what I have on the top of page 29 is the summary of the quarterly Pinnacle scores for dining and dining service and quality of food. So again, in both cases, the quarterly data is showing a positive trend, but especially for dining service, our last quarterly summary of 3.55 is well below the national average of 4.19. The quality of food has increased from 3.28 to 3.54 in the latest quarter, and we're getting close to the national average of 3.67. The healthcare services group dietitians survey that's done in the dining room, and you have the list of questions that are asked of 10 random residents every month. And that score for the month of September was 98%, which was the same in August. And again, you can see that their internal scoring has showed a trend up going back to September of 2014. On page 30, again, I talked about the staffing levels. And just a quick summary of some of the issues that we're continuing to look at. Dietary manager, regional manager met with Karen a few weeks ago to review the current onboarding or the orientation program. And again, now that we have the dietary preceptor back from FMLA. That individual will now be involved in employee training and also providing input on any changes that he believes necessary for during the orientation program. Also, because of the continuing issues that we have with meal services and dining room issues, Karen has put together a work group that includes CNAs and food service staff to work on those issues to make sure that we have a coordinated effort, as was previously mentioned in public participation, to try to get a better continuity or team approach between the CNAs and the food service staff in the dining room. New dietitian to replace Emily will be starting on November 16th. I'm sorry, I don't have her name here with me, but she will be starting on the 16th.
So Beck, I see you on page, I'm looking at 26. So there are some issues around, so we only 3 out of the 6 measures on the Pinnacle score are we above the national average at this point, right? So an area we really need to focus on, because we've been at 50% and we want to be meeting the national averages. So that's an area I know you're working on, but an area to focus on. And another one would be the nursing home compare summary. Is that for updated as of October? Is it that? No?
No.
Okay, I won't go to that one.
Well, it is updated, but it's not updated based on...
It doesn't have our research.
Surveys.
Okay.
Hang on, I lost my spot. I wanted to back up to page 25. Just point out in regards to our expanded specialized services, in regards to our pulmonary rehab program, we are still working on the agreement between our new pulmonary physician with Christie Clinic and the contract. So hopefully we're going to get that worked out within the next couple of weeks, and I can come to you next month saying that we have it in place and maybe actually starting to see some patients in that program. So we're moving forward. And can't wait to get that going.
And you've got the outpatient rehab program running now.
Yes. And we have.
Is it like in its second or third month, or is it more than that?
Yeah, it's early September.
That's what I thought. And
the current volume is we've been averaging about 3 residents. I think right now, correct me if I'm wrong, 2 from adult daycare and 1 was a recently discharged resident from the home.
So you think any issues with that program at this point?
Nope, just a matter of trying to grow it as best as we can.
And you're short 1 nurse practitioner, right?
Yes, but the nurse practitioner is being covered temporarily by one of the other call nurse practitioners on a part-time basis. So we do have 2 nurse practitioners. We just don't have 2 full-time nurse practitioners in the building. And Carl is in the process of recruiting a permanent replacement.
Any questions or comments on those? So, anybody else? Yeah, Sam?
I was going to ask, how do you market the outpatient program? You mentioned trying to grow it.
What we're doing now is continuing to communicate with the hospitals, the managed care organizations, all the health alliances that's going to be pulling out of the MMAI program. Talking with all of the assisted living facilities, I mean, all the providers that we typically work with. So one of the things that we have not done in the past is actively doing traditional public marketing. We've never had a marketing budget, but that's something that we...
Can we have Matt with Carl, at least, and that they suggested to us that we look at maybe a lymphedema program, getting someone certified to actually handle lymphedema, and they said they could keep us busy all day long. So we'll see. They're actually investing in having one of their therapists trained. And the earliest we can do that is December, but that's where they see a need that's not being filled, the current providers here in town. So.
And also the VA. Again, the VA was the one that, one of the first clients, if you want to call them that, who voiced interest in us putting together the outpatient rehab program. So we, none of those are VA. One of them is?
Historically, we've had some VA in there, but not right now.
Well, and the logical market for it is people who are discharged home who have been rehabilitating here and being treated here. So I think as your program ages, it, you ought to get some growth from that, just as you're discharging patients home.
Well, and again, you know, the strategy behind that is because you have, especially the medical the Med Advantage programs, but also Molina and Health Alliance are really trying to keep our Medicare inpatient length of stay down. This provides that continuity of care if additional therapy is required when they go home, because they will be, if they do come back here as an outpatient, on an outpatient therapy basis, they will see the same therapist that took care of them on the inpatient side. So, you know, that's the marketing strategy that we have with the hospitals and the managed care plans, to say this is an advantage for sending those residents to us, because we can make sure that we have continuity of care.
And one of the trends, I'm sure you're hearing this too, is that industry-wide Medicare, the feds have identified that one of the areas of overutilization in the Medicare Advantage programs is in the number of skilled care days. Somebody gets into a skilled nursing facility and knows what the opportunity is, and that people don't do a good enough job of progressing and kind of say this is what it'll be. So that there's the likelihood of needing that outpatient service more and more, because there'll be more and more pressure from the feds to reduce that length of stay.
And I think, I'm not going to say this with everyone, but with a lot of the long-term care providers, the response to that has been to fight the managed care plans, try to maintain their length of stay. Now, our approach has always been that we're going to work with the plans. So if, you know, if they want to see a reduction,
they come send them to you.
Right. We're going to work with them and say, okay, what can we do? And that's our discussions that we have with therapy and with our physicians. What can we do to improve our ability to keep our therapy outcomes as high as possible, but also minimize length of stay? I mean, you know, to a certain extent, are we shooting ourselves in the foot? Yes, but that's the way the market is going. And the long-term approach is, if we are able to show high quality of therapy services with a minimal length of stay, we will see an increase in referral.
Right. Any other questions for Dr. Hope? Any other questions or comments on the on the metrics? Okay, monthly financial report, you highlight a few things.
Okay, so if you want to, not in the board packet, but the mailing that I sent out on Friday, we'll go through that document. And again, I included the statistics because we found as we went through the financials that we had an error in the Medicaid conversion days. So Medicare days did not change, VA days did not change, but I originally had in the management report 493 Medicaid conversion days. There were only 390 Medicaid conversion days. So a Medicaid census with the conversion days, the chart on page one, Medicaid at 114, private pay was 55. But as I've done in, I think, last month, I am now including the census without the Medicaid conversion days, so you have a better idea of the types of residents that we actually have in the building. And so if you look on page two, again, the overall census was 175.9 for the month, 103 Medicaid, 65.6 private pay, 6.6 Medicare, and 0.4 average VA for the month. So again, obviously the census is continues to stagnate at 175 for the month of September. In October, The census is expected to be 171.5 with 8.3 Medicare, and we are still hovering right around 171, 170 right now, and our Medicare is, I think, at 10 or 11 as of 11 as of today. So what I want to point out is on page 3, in October, we did see an increase in overall admissions. So you can see over in October, we had 21 admissions, of which the growth was in Medicare admits. We had 13 Medicare admits for the month of October, but our discharges and separations continue to run in the low 20s. So for the month of October, the higher number of admissions did not equate to an increase in census because we did have 22 going out the door. So, and so far, it's really early in the month. We've had, I think it's 5 or 6 admissions. Right now we have 7 referrals that are being worked on. And again, we don't know at this point whether they will turn into admissions, but we have, and it's a mixture of Medicare, private pay, and Medicaid that Josh, our admissions director, is currently working on. So it's too early to tell if we're going to have a good month with admissions in October or not. But we continue to still see lower hospital activity, but we'll see if October is a trend moving back into a positive direction in terms of admissions. Payer mix without conversion days on page 5 shows you again that we're at 58.8% Medicaid, 37% private pay, and 3.8% Medicare for the month of September. And again, our year-to-date mix is 56.3% Medicaid and 36.9% private pay, pretty much where we have been over the last few years. On page 6, summarizing our net income and cash, our net income or loss for the month of September was a negative $79,000, which obviously is reflective of the census. But in addition to that, our revenue was reduced by that $78,000 loss that was shown also includes a reduction in our Medicaid, our MMAI Medicare revenue. I'm sorry, that actually should be Medicaid revenue, not Medicare. I apologize for that typo. So, about a year ago, we approached the state asking if there was going to be an intergovernmental transfer program for Medicaid managed care. And the answer at that time was, we hadn't thought about that, but that's a good idea. So, to summarize where we're at, the state is currently working on a state plan amendment to allow an IGT into the managed for the Medicaid managed care. At that time, the state felt that it would just take a few months to get that agreement in place. Well, no surprise, it's going on a year, and again, the agreement is between the state and the federal government, or CMS. So, in the interim, the state decided that they would pay us our full cost rate without requiring any transfers of monies back to the state. So our typical IGT rate right now runs about $158 per day. The state, for every Molina or Health Alliance patient that we get, we are now being paid roughly $200 per day. So last year, HFS told us that we should not anticipate that they would be retroactively asking for an IGT transfer back. And that hasn't changed. But because it's been going on for so long, I'm leery that even though the state has not said that they have said, or they have not said to date, that they're going to require us to retroactively provide IGT monies back to them. The prudent thing at this point is to start banking those dollars moving forward in case it happens. It may be once this agreement is put together that the state says keep the money and we'll move, and we'll start transfers at that point whenever the agreement is put into place. But I think at this point it's prudent that we start recognizing that MMEI revenue at a lower rate and putting roughly the additional $40 per day on the balance sheet is something that may in the future have to be refunded or returned back to the state. So again, the state has not said that they're going to require that, but I'm just, it's my glass half empty approach to dealing with the state. It's no other way to put it.
And for this year, it would be $40,000 if you put all of that. Is that right?
It's roughly $40,000 a month. It was $40,000 for the month of September. So it depends on the census that we have. With so moving forward, you could say roughly $40,000 a month in reduced revenue that we're going to be showing on the income statement. So I want to make it clear, we are still going to be paid at the higher rates, but we're going to start putting it on the balance sheet as a potential payable back to the state.
For how long? And will we cap it?
If I can get clarity from the state, I can maybe cap it or stop it. But at this point, I'm going to continue it for now until we get some idea from the state. Maybe
so you're afraid to be counting your chickens.
Right.
So when would you expect that? If there were a future, you don't know when. Right?
I have no idea.
So my concern is that this just keeps going. It's not a concern. It's just a thought that, you know, here we are 10 months down the road, we've got $400,000 banked.
But the downside for us is that worst case is we get it back, right? We get to keep it.
But we're not using it potentially for things maybe we should be using it for too. So is, you know, just, I don't know what the number is, but if 400,000 is too much to have banked, maybe we should just have a $250,000 and then use that, the above, I don't know. What we could anticipate
well,
them to ask for.
Or
you could revisit
it. Just a board member that we revisited at X.
Yeah, I was thinking
point,
like every 3 months. Or, I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, a quarterly sort of revision because, or revisit because you really, we really have no way of knowing, and I think it's a safety thing too, because theoretically, if they do try to claw that money back, that they could essentially put you into a precipitous financial problem that the county really might not be ready for that to happen so fast. On the other hand, the budget could at some point be solved. We're going to cross the January 1st threshold thing. Who knows what would happen there. There's some hint that things will happen after the 1st, and there may be a change in the political climate at the in Springfield. It's not something you really want to do for forever, but you could do it for 3 months and revisit and look at that decision.
Well, and we can raise it every 3 months if we want to. I mean, it doesn't have to even be anything formal. We can just try to make sure we relook at that.
I just
sure.
want this to fall off
right.
the table.
No.
A year from now, we've got $500,000.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then
I agree.
Let's make sure we look at it at least on a
quarterlies.
Right. Fair and unless the budget. You know, if the state budget would pass, then we definitely want to see
yeah, I don't know
where we stand.
And the state budget really doesn't have an impact on the agreement, but
yeah, they're
it's
almost
a separate issue.
It is
a separate issue.
But yeah, you probably just can't do this in perpetuity and not really have an idea of what's going to happen.
And this is something that I will continue to update you at least on a quarterly basis, but it's something that we've been trying to get clarity from our contact at HFS. I mean, it's been, what, maybe going on 3 weeks since, you know, he literally has not returned our calls yet. So that doesn't mean anything about this issue because it's kind of par for the course with all questions that we have to the state. We just don't get a timely response back right
okay,
now.
So let's, I think it's a good move to make. I think Jack's suggestion of looking at it quarterly, make sure we're it's an appropriate thing to be doing is a good idea.
And since he started last month, Maybe the next reporting would be January 1st. That'd give us 3 months and at least work on that.
Okay.
Well, no, I didn't. I apologize. To my right is Gary Winchell, who is MPA's Director of Financial Services, or my numbers guy. So I asked him, he's always here, sometimes with me, sometimes not with me. He works very closely with the business office and all the aspects of it. And he had a lot to do with the what we're going to talk about in just a minute, which is the cash flow analysis and the revenue anticipation notes. He did all of the numbers work on putting together those cash flow projections. So I apologize, Gary, for not introducing you at the beginning.
Is there anything else you want to cover in the financial
report? No, I just want to point out that all of our Medicaid rates, including the reduced MMAI rates, also include a 5% Medicaid rate reduction that I talked about that we put into the budget. And again, it's just an estimate. I have no idea at this point where the state's going to come down on the Medicaid rate cut, but we do know that we should anticipate a Medicaid rate cut. That's all I had.
Okay.
Questions?
Are there questions on the financial report or the management, the general management report? Okay, you want to talk about the market position, market share analysis?
All right, so going back to the management packet, pages 42 to 64, and I have provided some of this data to you previously. And this is the market analysis census summary for the area facilities based on the Medicaid cost reports. Now, what you have updated is 2014 data that recently came out within the last 6 weeks, but also a narrative summary that starts on page 42 through 46. So I just wanted to point out, and that I had actually in the management report, few highlights without going through this. And again, if you have any questions, feel free to ask. Just bear with me as I find the main points that I have, which are on page 39. So what we're seeing in the market, basically what I'm going what we're showing is where the Champaign County Nursing Home in relation to our competitors in the market. And again, our two main competitors, if you want to call it our primary market facilities, is Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab and Heartland of Champaign. So Heartland of Champaign is 102 beds. Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab is 213 beds, and we are at 243 beds. The other four facilities are Helia at 118 beds, Heartland and Paxton at 106. And the reason why they're considered in the market is they do get a fair percentage of Medicare referrals from the two local hospitals. Then you have Country Health at 89 beds, Illini Heritage at 60 beds. So on page 39, the overall census in the market has shown a decline. And so that's reflected on page 47 in terms of days. So you can see that the total number of days between 2009 and 2014 has dropped by about 15,000 days, or roughly about a 10% decrease. So you can look at it, that includes all days, Medicare, Medicaid, private pay. So the takeaway from that is, I think no surprise, there's a contraction that we're seeing in the overall census in our facilities. So, but what's going on with us and all the other facilities? So if you turn to page 49, you've got the overall census. And if you take a look at that chart, during this time of contraction, our census has actually gone up during that period. Big changes have taken place predominantly with Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab, or CUNR. They've gone from 184 to 123. And we know from what we're hearing that's going on right now, they are running probably below 123 at this point, from what we're hearing through the grapevine. And we've also had just recently had some staff layoffs over the last couple of weeks, and probably has an impact on the increase in number of applications that we have seen this month. Heartland of Champaign has shown a slight decrease from 88 to 81. Now you take a look at the private pay market. If you turn to page 60, the private pay market is contracted by about 30%. So they had 104,000 days in 2009. And by 2014, we're down to about just under 71,000 days. So then if you turn to page 62, and you take a look at the private pay census by facilities, you can see that our private pay census has declined, but not significantly. We were at 70 and a half residents in 2009. 2014, we're 67.8, and we're roughly right at that number currently. CUNR, their overall census declined, but their private pay has declined significantly from 82 and a half to 22. And then if you take a look at Heartland and Champaign, they've lost private pay census by 50%. Now, just remember I said Heartland's census, overall census, was at 88 and declined slightly to 81. So how are they maintaining their census while their private pay census has declined significantly? And so if you turn to Medicaid census on page 57, you can see that Heartland Champaign has increased their Medicaid from 6.2 to 20.5 in 2014. That's a fundamental shift in their market position, because they have always tried to keep their Medicaid census as low as possible. But no surprise, in order to maintain overall census, they have been more willing to take more Medicaid over the last few years. But that's going to have an impact on their financial bottom line. And where are we with our Medicaid? So during this time, our Medicaid has ranged between 95.8 to a high of 120 in 2012, and in 2014 we're at 108, and again, that's where we've been so far on an average basis this year. And if you take a look on page 58, our Medicaid market share has been steady between in the low 30% between 2009 and 2014. So we have not increased the amount of Medicaid that we're taking care of in the community. By far, we take the highest percentage at over 30%, but the community is, we're not seeing a significant or any increase in reliance on Champaign County for Medicaid at this point in time. So that looks pretty good from our standpoint. So again, our private pay has remained steady. We haven't lost any private pay census. Medicaid has remained constant with no really significant increase. But we do have opportunities with Medicare. And if you turn to page 53, and you take a look at our Medicare market share, there's room for improvement with us. And again, that's our opportunity. So, and again, one of the reasons why we did the renovations to Unit 4 is to try to improve on our Medicare market share by, number one, differentiating ourselves from a physical plan standpoint by being able to offer private Medicare rooms, but also programmatically, we're talking about to improve our medical management with our physician coverage, but also with nursing and all the things that we're doing to control readmissions, the pulmonary clinic, outpatient rehab, all those things are trying to help us improve our Medicare base in the market. So again, what this tells me is that compared to the other facilities, we have been doing very well, all things considered, with all the changes that are going on in the marketplace at this point in time. Any questions? What I have here. And again, you can read the narrative, take a look through the charts, and please feel free and do not hesitate to contact me by phone or email with any questions that you have on this data. But again, it's the best comparative data that we have, which is the Medicaid cost reports, and it's the most recent data that we can get at this point in time.
Questions for
private pay is a good thing, right?
Yes. So
what did Country Health do that no one else was able to do in that category?
Do you have any idea? I never did ask that question. No idea. I mean, they don't know.
And one thing, Country Health is fairly small.
Yes.
So one thing they can do is just cap. I'm saying that they are doing this, I don't know, but it'd be possible, since they're small, to just limit and then fill up with non-Medicaid.
And again, numbers-wise, because they are a small facility, you're not talking about a large change in actual numbers of residents.
But a big difference in their
percentage.
Performance.
Yes,
yeah.
Yep.
Whereas somebody like CUNR, pretty big, would be more difficult for them to make that kind of shift without, I mean, they've made the shift in the percentage, but they've done it by reducing their days overall. Okay, any other questions or comments about the market share? Like, again, helpful to see, put things in perspective. Okay, next agenda item, Medicare unit.
All right, so briefly on the Medicare unit, it officially opened on November 2nd. We have three residents currently, and I think we have two referrals, out of the half a dozen or so that may turn out to be Medicare admissions. I know one of them is a Med Advantage that we're working on trying to get approval from Health Alliance for coverage. So we're planning on a public open house on December 10th. More information on that will be disseminated as we put that together.
So if that turns out to be December 10th, and I can't remember where that falls with our board meetings.
It's a Thursday
right before the next
board
one.
Meeting.
Yeah, so make sure you let us know.
Yep.
So that we can support that. Okay. Revenue anticipation.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Thinking about the December calendar, when is the December to maybe, you know, some of the board members might like to attend?
I don't know a date yet.
Okay.
Yeah, but that would be nice. Mm-hmm. It's a great idea, Mary.
And that would be a nice event.
And we were kind of looking at trying to schedule them a few days apart, so. But we can let you know about that also.
Thank you.
Revenue anticipation
notes. Okay, next item on page is on page 65 to 77, and you have the narrative, and 77 goes to the last page of your packet. A couple of scenarios. So, Gary and I presented this to the county board study session the other week to talk about our strategy to deal with a potential Medicaid payment slowdown. So I keep saying that what I wrote in here is it's very likely, it's probably a given from what everyone tells me that there will be a Medicaid payment slowdown at some point in the future. What we don't know is when it will take place and for how long. And so what I was asked to do is, what we did was put together a cash flow projection to see with two scenarios, a 3-month payment delay in a 6-month payment delay, and our ability to be able to maintain cash flow during a payment delay, and would it necessitate the requirement of revenue anticipation notes. So again, the revenue anticipation notes, the best way of summarizing this, what they are, is the county's way of getting what would be equal to a line of credit for a private facility, because being a local form of government, we are not allowed to go directly to the bank to get a working capital loan or a line of credit. So the revenue anticipation note is the only mechanism that we have to borrow against a revenue or potential revenue, which would be obviously Medicaid.
Who funds those?
I'm sorry?
Who funds the notes? Is that through a bank or?
Bank lending institution.
Oh, lending.
Yeah. All of the above. So, but the question that we don't have an answer to is whether anyone is going to be willing to buy these notes. We went through this back in 2011 when we were dealing with a six-month payment delay. We did not have to issue any revenue anticipation notes at that time. But what we found is that there was not a lot of serious interest. We had interest from one lending institution, which I think was Citibank, right, Chicago, that was willing to take a look at it. But we didn't go any further because we got paid by the state, and we didn't need the grants. So we did a 3-month payment delay scenario and a 6-month payment delay scenario, and it's summarized in the documents. And if you take a look on page 65, to summarize the two scenarios, what we assumed, and again, we assumed that the payment delay would start in February of next year. There's no rhyme or reason, we just picked a point in time. So on a 3-month payment delay, payments would resume in May of 2016, and they would resume on both scenarios where the state would start making regular monthly payments but would not make any catch-up payments for a year, for 12 months. So in month 13 of the restart of payments, then the state would start doubling their payments and getting caught up. So in the 3-month scenario, and it's also based on our current cash flow or historical cash flow numbers that we've seen in recent months, we would not need to issue any revenue anticipation notes. But what we would have to do is that we would have to conserve, and what you have here in the chart, under maximum cash shortfall, we would have to conserve $435,000 in cash. And by conserving, I mean that we would have to, the only way to conserve cash is to slow down payments to vendors. So, and you can see $435,000 would be roughly about 120 days out. And right now, we are roughly paying our vendors between 30 and 60 days out, depending on the vendors. That's correct, right? So again, by conserving cash, we would not have to issue any RANs with a 3-month payment delay, but we would have to have delays, payments to some of our vendors. And again, just as a frame of reference, in 2011, when we were dealing with the 6-month payment delay, we had some of our vendors out 12 months. And the biggest one was our therapy vendor. We were paying interest, but they allowed us to go 12 months out not paying their invoices. And you can take a look, on the cash on our accounts payable, we're down to about $1.5 million in payables. I mean, we're caught up for all intents and purposes with our payables, including therapy. We've all caught up on all our outstanding received payables. So we would not need to do what we did back in 2011 based on our cash flow projections. Under the 6-month.
Are you essentially assuming that's sort of what the market would tolerate? The vendors would tolerate a 120-day. That's why you think we wouldn't have to do revenue anticipation notes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was the interest we paid them last time?
Was it 10-12%?
Are you talking to vendors?
Yeah.
Yeah, the vendors, some none because they were nice to us. Others we paid as high as 12%.
Wow.
Well, we're hoping mm-hmm. on the revenue anticipation notes will be somewhere in the 4-6% range. Hopefully lower, but again, you got to be conservative. And I know.
I doubt you'd actually get people to lend you money for 6%. I think it'd be higher, to be honest.
Actually, depending on their understanding of the Medicaid receivable.
Yeah.
When you think of your tax revenue, and I think Dan's going to be presenting tomorrow, Dan Welch, your treasurer, for the tax anticipation notes, when those go out to bid last year, they came in at 55 basis points, just over 0.5% for 1 year is all we paid for those to borrow that. But people could understand that because that was based upon tax revenue. Will they understand it on Medicaid? This year we packaged it a little differently. We included contracts with the federal government so that the bank's legal counsel would hopefully understand it a little better. So we're hoping to get a rate as reasonable as possible. It's a strong receivable, other than the fact that, I know, the state of Illinois.
The state of Illinois.
I love the state of Illinois, but you have to say it. Some of the banks say, you know, we're maxed out on state of Illinois obligations. And I had that conversation 4 years ago with Dan with a number of the banks. And then others were a little more adventurous. Actually, we're a little more optimistic this year because under our current bond council, they found a way to extend by refunding these notes, which is typically a one-year obligation, to refund them to where they can extend them longer. And that way there's not a true ending point to them where the banks last year would say, well, what if Medicaid doesn't start paying you within a year? Well, that's very unlikely because that was most homes in the state under. Well, what was the question from the banks? Well, what if they don't, you know, pay you within a year? And that's a question. It's like, well, would the county be obligated? Well, we don't want the county obligated.
That was my next question. What is the collateral that we're providing?
The collateral we're providing is exactly under the RAND documents, under the law, your only collateral can be the receivables themselves, the Medicaid receivables, and you can only borrow 85% of that. But where the rate will be, that's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, we really don't know. But
and we don't know.
But we're not asked, the bond documents do not have the county guaranteeing the notes.
No.
It's all based on the Medicaid receivables. And again, by putting our actual contract between us and Medicaid, we're saying, you know, Medicaid receivables, we're arguing that the state can't decide to not pay us a Medicaid. I mean, it's a contract they have with the federal government. So we're saying, you know, it's probably not quite in the same category as property tax revenue, but it's got to be pretty close to it. That's the argument, or that's the presentation that we're trying to put into this set of bond documents.
This is the worst case scenario. And nursing homes were to default. Because they didn't get paid. What do the banks go after?
The banks go after the federal government and the Medicaid receivable. That's a valid receivable. We provided the service. Just as if we would go under and we had private pay people there and they hadn't paid for several months, they could sue those people also. If they took over the entire operation.
But they're just incurring a lot of costs on the legal side of recovery, and that's what they're factoring into their...
But there's no assets that are being put up as collateral.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, just to clarify on that chart we kind of talked about, we said maximum shortfall, where would that come from, the 435 and the 660? As we get back to the graphs, that's generally satisfied at year end once we get the tax anticipation note sold. Then we pay that back, and that's something that traditionally we've done. When we get that cash up front, then we can pay down those debts. So that's not an indefinite number that people would be out there 6-7 months for years to come. It's just a timing in cash, and we wanted to show here at any one point in time what would that obligation be.
So if you, and again, we're not going to go over this month by month. If you take a look on page 74 through 77, so page 74 and 75 is the monthly projection for the three-month payment delay. So we worked this out by month, starting in January. And so what you have is cash deposits in the first section at the top. What you see is Medicaid MMEIs, and other payments, which would include private pay, Medicare, everything else that we get from our payers. In cash out, we have wages and benefits, non-labor, and others, which would include bond payments, interest and principal. And then you've got your surplus or deficit, beginning cash balance, ending cash balance for each month. And then where you see delay slash pay in parentheses, non-labor expenses, that's where the $465,000 is coming from, or $435,000. So you can see that in March, we would conserve $80,000, April, $145,000, et cetera, et cetera. And then you see in December, when we get the tax anticipation warrant, we have the option of getting those vendors caught up. And then if you go to January 2017, you see that, assuming that the state starts making regular monthly payments, we would not have to delay vendor payments going into 2017 or 2018. Now on page 76, where we're talking about a 6-month payment delay, now the cash conservation requirements goes up to, right. So, and again, even with the RANs, we have to conserve cash, mainly because we can only borrow 85 cents on the dollar. That's the maximum that we can borrow with the revenue anticipation notes. So we still do have to conserve our cash. But again, under the 6-month scenario, you know, we believe that we can keep it to probably 120 days. The maximum would be 6 months out. And again, we see no scenario where we would need to go 12 months out with any of our vendors under this scenario.
Okay, so what do you need from this board? You're just informing us.
We're just informing you. So basically what I'm saying is that based on this analysis, we can weather a payment delay. And we could actually weather an even longer payment delay, even up to 12 months if necessary. And again, it does not require any changes operationally. We don't have to cut staff, close down a unit, et cetera, et cetera. It would be business as usual. The only thing that we would be doing is issuing a RAN under the 6-month payment delay, and under the 3 or 6 month, we would have to delay payments to vendors, but we would not have to make any cuts operationally to go get through this. So
the only one frustrating thing out of it all, if we need to go through this, because again, 6 months would be $2 million, so it's a significant cash shortfall. So we need to do the RANs. But the one frustrating thing is when you have to do that, then you incur interest expense and you incur issuance costs. So we factored that in, and we know that's a reality. And if there was another way to do it without those costs, we certainly would. But to be able to do it on our own, that's our one vehicle, and that's the revenue anticipation notes. And then the interest and issuance costs are part of that.
And the other option that we were looking at, and I pointed this out on page 66, is we are trying to get a political solution. But, I mean, I can't put all my eggs in that basket, which is trying to get special consideration. I've talked about this before, from the governor's and or controller's office. So we are still trying to get a meeting with the Illinois Comptroller's Office to see if there's some level of Medicaid payments that the comptroller can agree to pay us on a monthly basis. So what we calculated, what Gary calculated for me, is that if the comptroller would agree to pay us a minimum of 70% of our normal Medicaid cash or payments, we would not have to issue RANs. But if they could only, for somehow we could get them to agree to 50% regular monthly payments, we would still need to issue RANs. But if we could somehow get the comptroller to say, yes, we're gonna do you guys a favor and we'll pay you 70%, or you know, obviously it would be nice if you could pay us 100%. But in talking with our contacts, you know, everyone's trying to do the same thing. If the comptroller has $1 to pay $5 every day, there's gonna have to be some compromise. So, but if we can get some level of regular monthly payments, it's better than nothing. But what we figured is anything below 70%, we would need to issue mans if there's a six-month payment delay.
So does the kind board, have they already approved this, or do they have to?
Yes.
Okay, so we don't have to, do we have to make a recommendation to the county board so that they approve it? Is there any action required of this board to... when would it go to the county board for approval then? Once we start to have the delay in payment, or do we get the approval now that you've sort of worked through it?
It's not going to the county board for approval in November. It may go on a December agenda.
So the issue is, well, again, get back to the...
So you do sort of need from this board then saying we're comfortable essentially accepting the policy that if we have a slowdown in payments or delay in payments, first tactic would be to slow down our payments to vendors up to an amount of $435,000 about. If it's a six-month delay in payments, that then we would want to issue RAN, right? Wouldn't this board?
Because the alternative is, obviously, if it's longer than a three-month payment delay, if we don't have RANs, we'd run out of cash.
Right.
Because we wouldn't have any other options of accessing cash.
I think it seems like a good thing that you've thought out. I just feel like we should make sure that we are comfortable proceeding that way. But I would like the board to talk about it a little bit, and I feel like it's enough of a significant impact that it ought to be something we make a recommendation to the county board about. It ought to be our job to have done just what you've done and understand it and say it makes sense to us. I know we don't have the fiduciary responsibility, so it, but still.
I agree with what you're saying. I whether the board approves or not, we'll see. They may opt to wait until they have to, but I think we should at least let them know that this board has looked at this and considers this to be a good viable option if needed as a reserve, and that we have plans to take actions that will prevent us from having to do it unless.
Yeah, I think it's really great that you came up with this. So what are the costs if we do the 6 month? I know you've incorporated the cost, but what are the costs? You use an assumption of
We assumed an interest rate of 5%, and what do we put for issuance costs?
Well, the issuance process is still being debated between bond council, and then it will depend, obviously, with the relationship with the banks. Since you do these on a two-month basis, will their legal counsel, bond counsel has agreed to do this, is to blend the costs over the course of a year, because you're doing these every 2 months, but they are individual grants, or each individual investments. So it's whether or not the banks will abide by that. The legal bond counsel believes they can get a bank convinced to do that, but I'm not sure if they will or not. If anybody's familiar with banks or not around here. But it is going to be the same instrument each time. Your receivable is going to change a little bit because different people will be on there. Some people pass away and some people are added to the list, and it changes, but the basic product's the same every 2 months. So we don't have that totally firmed up, but on a 6 month basis, it could total upwards to $250,000.
For both costs or for the interest and the issuance?
Right.
Yeah, so what we put in their projections is an interest rate estimated at 5% and aggregate issuance cost of $50,000 for the instruments at this point. And again, it's an educated guess.
And
the
interest
and
is about 180. It'll be about 230, but I said 250, but somewhere in that range is what we're estimating.
And I know you just told us this, but help me. So, and that's
hoping
on
for
what
pretty less, but you again have a plan.
Bonds. How much would you be issuing for?
So the average balance for 6 months is 1. If you take a look at page 72, you've got this more detailed summary. So the average balance that you would have for the six-month RANs is 1.2 million. So now what would be presented to the county would be the aggregate, because the bond council says that what needs to be approved is the aggregate amount, which
correct.
Is the total number of RAN per principal that is borrowed over the course. So again, you know, you would have to continue to borrow until the state makes, provides catch-up payments. In our scenario, we assume in a six-month payment delay, months one through six, no payments, month seven, the state would start making a regular monthly payment, but would not make any doubling of payments until month 13. And under that scenario, the aggregate amount that would need to be borrowed would be $4.76 million.
So would it, is it right to say that on aggregate amount of $4.7 million, it would cost us $250,000? That's not right. That would be right.
Well, because it's not the aggregate for that length, because some of the RANs are paid
right,
off in the
right,
interim.
Right.
So if you look at the schedule, you'll see when different RANs are paid off and when they're brought on.
Right.
So
but when we're all said and done, it would be that.
Well,
right?
you would have borrowed over the period of time 8 RANs for a total of the almost $4.8 million, but your average outstanding is only $1.2 million.
But what we would have paid for being able to do that is about $250,000.
Right.
Okay.
Because the interest was calculated on the outstanding balance,
yeah,
and then the issuance cost were estimated at $50,000.
Okay. And as you said, there's not a lot of other options other than delaying payments more for vendors and eventually not being able to pay bills. I mean, it's our version of a line of credit.
When Scott showed you the chart initially, from the MMAIs and from Medicare, it added up to $350,000. So over the course of, 6 months, that's $2.1 million that would be being delayed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we would have to do something. We wouldn't be able to sustain a cash flow loss like that.
And the state won't make up this debt, this quarter million that we're going to lose paying interest. I guess I'm saying it because I mentioned it here, quick stab there. I'm kind of pissed that we have to take it away from the care of these residents and pay it in interest because the state can't solve its problems.
At one point, 4 years ago, we pursued the opposite. Because they were delaying, they would owe us interest, and we were going to demand interest. And there is a vehicle for that, but not from a county.
Unfortunately, counties are prohibited
from
collecting late interest payments.
A private enterprise would be able to go after them for interest to help counter this interest.
Right.
We cannot do that, but we've checked thoroughly into that.
And so these are the arguments.
I thought that would be a good option,
yeah,
a good avenue.
So what you brought up, Jack, and what we talked about with interest and everything else, not being able to get a line of credit and having to incur additional issuance costs that private operators don't have to do, is all the list of items that we have communicated previously to the governor's office or the comptroller's office to say, this is why we need special treatment, because we are dealing under a different set of rules than anyone else. And you're making it harder for a county home to operate under this type of scenario. So can you work with us? Now, we'll have to see whether they will, but those are the arguments that we're making to give us special treatment.
Are there comments or questions? I'd like to have somebody entertain a motion.
Well, could they state what the motion is?
Wouldn't it be that we would recommend that we...
Maybe it would be that the Nursing Home Board is in support of the issuance of revenue anticipation notes to manage the cash flow issues of the nursing home.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You don't want to make it that specific.
Because we don't have the documents yet that will actually go to the county board. When they vote on it, they'll have to have the actual RAN documents in front of them, which is a very formal ordinance with a lot of information.
Okay, if we say, as what I want to do is stay with this concept.
Right.
Not necessarily with the specific numbers, but I think getting to a threshold of how long we would...
Right, if the payment delay goes beyond 3 months, that the Nursing Home Board is in support of the issuance
of RAN. Or at least consistent with the intent in this proposal,
yes,
would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my motion.
Okay.
I second.
All set.
Does that work for you? You feel like You have something there for a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you tell us what it is?
Oh, it's on the tape.
Okay, so it's to recommend moving ahead with a proposal along these lines, using revenue anticipation notes and under the same concept of delayed payment and revenue anticipation notes. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, I think this is, I really appreciate this.
This was great work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Electronic medical record.
Okay, just very briefly, I want you to know that we are, this is on page 40 of the management updates, that we are currently working on implementing electronic record, medical records upgrade with our current software vendor, Matrix Care. So basically, we're going to go to an all electronic medical record in the building. I put together the main benefits that we've got from the system. Right now, we're all paper-based, so I do believe that we are going to significantly improve the efficiency of our nurses, CNAs, but also our all of our managers in the building, especially our D1s and AD1s. Second bullet, improving the accuracy of our resident data and information. And this will have a direct positive impact on our Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement because both of those are based on our resident assessments called the MDS. Now, in terms of, you know, dollar amounts per day, it's hard to tell, but, you know, we're hopefully that we're going to be able to see increases in both our Medicare and Medicaid rates. And that has not been factored in any of our revenue projections on what the impact of the electronic medical records are going to be. Improving management oversight of resident care. This actually allows Karen, our managers, to actually take a look at all the documentation at any point in time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if they get a call in the evening about a resident, they can actually take a look at the documentation from home if necessary. It really does, I mean, it sounds crazy, but it really improves the ability for the supervisors to manage what's going on in the building by being able to see the records at any point in time. And again, the last bullet, the big thing is that I've talked about collectively with working with physicians, hospitals, and even the managed care plans. There's a big push by the federal government for all providers to go to an electronic health record system. And eventually, by us being with an electronic system, it improves the communication of information between the hospitals to the nursing home and from the nursing homes to the hospitals and also to home health care providers and physicians because everyone is being incentivized to have electronic records. The big problem is getting all these different systems to talk to each other.
So that is one of my questions. I got two questions. One of them is what's the cost and what is the communication ability between this and the hospitals? Can get access to this? Can you?
We're going to have a setup that the physicians will have all our practicing physicians will have their own access portal, whatever you call it. I mean, it's web based, so they can just get on any web browser and be able to access our system. You know, we're shooting to get to the point where they can submit their orders electronically. And so that allows for seamless transitions.
But so a resident goes to a hospital emergency department, the emergency department can't get access to this, right? Because
no,
nothing else.
No, and that's where you've got that transition of care document mm-hmm. or continuity of care document. And that's the big piece that I think everyone's having issues with in getting that. So we get that right now through, I'm losing that software, the system that the hospitals use.
Epic?
No, not Epic. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I can't think
okay,
of it.
Okay, so answer the cost question then.
The cost question? The biggest cost is the hardware, so we've got kiosks that will be implemented into the facility.
Laptops. The Wi-Fi project.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's really.
We actually budgeted last year. We did, yeah.
Yeah.
And is it not? It's not capital budget then. The way you do the laptops, they don't qualify as capital.
No. This project would be him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The entire.
I'm not sure where the disconnect was. But that would be capital. They just didn't do the project last year yet.
Yeah, so we budgeted it last year, and we budgeted again this year.
Right. In capital.
Yeah.
In capital.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's in the budget for this
okay.
year.
Okay. Okay. And we'd be spending what was budgeted.
Yes.
Right. And then what's the ongoing operating cost rates? Is that budget for 2016?
Yes. Yeah, that was included. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but our monthly fees to Matrix are going up. I just don't remember what it is, but it was
less than $1,000.
Yeah.
It wasn't
oh, not very much. No, okay. And is when you picked this vendor, is that what was the basis of that selection? Briefly, I mean, is that how yeah. prevalent is that in the industry? What other options did you look at for a software vendor?
I mean, we've had this software in-house since 2009
okay.
in some aspect. We've done it MBSs.
And it's been good enough that you felt like
yes.
you were willing to expand it.
Yeah.
And right now in the market, there's two main vendors. There's Matrix that we have, and the other one is Point Click Care. And it basically becomes an issue of
You've
staff
already
preference.
Invested in Matrix.
Yeah,
and
staff preference in terms of the user interface, because they both kind of work differently. And so... after kicking the tires, they were comfortable with Matrix. I mean, they'll do the same thing. And, you know, electronic med pass, you know, electronic records. And there's no changes to the financial system. We're going to use the same financial system.
Okay. Erin.
So is that cost reflected in the administration budget or the nursing budget? I'm looking for it on here.
It would be in administration.
And then the cost of rehabbing the new unit, is that in administration as well then?
All that is going to get, I don't know where it's going right now.
So it's
because,
not reflected? What
well, no, it is because a lot of it, I mean, the majority of the cost is furniture. So I think it's roughly about $50,000 that we're going to spend. Probably over $30,000 is on furnishings,
mm-hmm.
and all the rest is basically paint,
mm-hmm.
Coat base, and I think that was the main thing. They were just cosmetic changes, basically new paint in all of the rooms and the hallways, waxing the floors.
Which part of the budget do they go in under, administration or nursing or maintenance?
Maintenance and then capital.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay. Any other business?
Yeah, I think we opened earlier tonight hearing about the something that sounds simple about the idea of the beverages at meals, and I'm just wondering if you could just print out duplicate meal things and have an early version come out so that people can sort of look at the beverage and start getting the beverages ready while they're waiting for the meals to go out. It sounds like it's just a little bit of a waste of paper, but...
But they actually have lists
yeah.
that go out every day that are specific to each unit, so I don't know why they didn't have their list.
Okay.
It is a process that's already in place.
Are the residents assigned to tables? Or?
It depends. Some people move around. Majority of them sit in the same places, but.
But that's what I'm saying. If they're assigned to tables, you could have a place card there at the table with their names on it.
Well, I assume it may change pretty it changes a lot from almost maybe from day to day. That's why I'm thinking that the meals have been sort of selected in advance for that particular meal so that it would seem that their beverage option might be something that could fit with that changing environment, but anyway, all right.
What you're saying is
there are lists of adaptive equipment and
yeah.
consistencies,
yeah.
yeah. But we want
they didn't use it, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Do I have a motion to go into closed session?
Oh, sorry.
I move that we go into closed session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2(11) to consider litigation that is probable or imminent against Champaign County
And further, that Scott Gima, Brian Nolan, and Deb Busey remain.
And Karen Knopke.
Oh, and Karen Knopke and Gary Winchell, sorry.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
It's a roll call.
It's a roll call, that's right, yeah.
Hodson?
Yes.
Palinkas?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Banks?
Yes.
Coert?
Yes.
And Emmanuel?
Yes. Okay. We're in close.